Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, with the return of warm weather comes increased concerns about Lyme disease. It's easily treated when caught early, but the longer it goes undiagnosed, the greater the risks. Onondaga County Health Commissioner Dr. Cynthia Morrow will update us on the symptoms and treatment of Lyme disease.
But first, throughout the centuries, elders have been revered for their wisdom and knowledge. But in our growing youth-obsessed culture, we've ignored the insights of our oldest citizens, experts who have literally learned from experience. If we only listened to their tried-and-true advice, we might save ourselves a lot of mistakes and heartache.
Our guest, Dr. Carl Pillemer, is a professor of human development in the College of Human Ecology at Cornell University and professor of gerontology and medicine at the Weill Cornell Medical College. In 2004, he founded the Legacy Project, where he began collecting practical advice for living from over 1,000 seniors across the U.S. The project led to the book 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Pillemer.
Well, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Just recently, there was a survey in the UK, and British grandparents were quoted as saying they felt they were in danger of being overlooked for advice by their grandchildren. 9 out of every 10 grandparents that was interviewed claimed that their grandchildren were sidelining them by looking at Google and YouTube and Wikipedia as a resource rather than coming to them, and that would be on practical advice, deeper wisdom, and past history. And something tells me that would not surprise you. I want to ask you right off the bat, why did you write the book? What was behind it?
I think I would sum it up this way. I'd been a gerontologist for 25 years, and I hit on what for me was a pretty amazing revelation, or I should say maybe it hit me, namely that almost all the research I'd been doing over the years was entirely focused on older people's problems and older people as problems. So I'd studied Alzheimer's disease, and I direct a center for the study of chronic pain, and I'd looked at family caregiving. I realized that it was so problem-focused that I was missing all the advantages of aging and the vibrant folks who are out there who could offer, you know, important contributions and advice to younger people. So I began to feel that my own view was too narrow. And I was also hit at the same time by the wave of research showing that older people are actually happier than younger people. So in surveys or in scores of happiness, people in their 70s beyond, even though they have a burden of chronic illness and they've experienced a lot of loss, are actually happier than younger people. So I stopped and asked myself, basically, what's that all about? And is there some way that we could learn what it is that older people know about having a happy, healthy, or more successful life that younger people don't? And that's pretty much what led to the start of the project.
Well, what is your conclusion about why older people might be generally happier than younger people?
You know, there are several reasons, but I'll give you two categories of them. As we look in gerontology at how people turn out over the course of their lives, we usually focus on two things. And the first of those is developmental. So what happens to a person just because they're getting older as an individual? And one of the things that we know about people as they enter their 70s and beyond is something different happens to them. And in particular, they become acutely aware of their limited time horizon. So they're really aware that it's time to number your days. Interestingly, that doesn't make old people depressed as much as it makes them make better choices. So they choose to be around people who make them happier. They choose experiences more effectively. And in general, they regulate their emotions better. So it hit me, why do we have to wait till we're 70 and beyond to understand that? Perhaps we could ask people about it and they could tell us. So that's one reason why I think it's important. The other issue is the cohort they grew up in, especially if we're talking about the oldest Americans and the greatest generation. They've been through war. They've been through poverty. We're in an economic downturn now, but they had bad jobs that make our bad jobs look like good jobs. So they've really experienced a lot of the hardship and the kind of problems that keep younger people awake at night. And again, the idea was, could we take that knowledge of how to live well through hard times and distill it and make it available to people of all ages. So I think it's those two things. It's where they are developmentally and the kinds of historical and personal experiences they've been to that gives them this advice-giving potential.
Sticking with happiness for a moment, I know many people who you interviewed had a thought that happiness is a choice, not a condition, that you can choose to look at things a certain way and that will influence the outcome. And I'm very interested in that because that's easier said than done. And we were wondering, do you think this belief evolved over time, or were they just more optimistic people and you're interviewing them at a certain point in their life? How many people can flip that switch and choose happiness?
It was first shared with me by one of the first people I interviewed, who was an extremely impaired older woman living in a nursing home. So she was living in circumstances that most of us would consider very undesirable. And she's the one who said to me, she actually said young man, which was nice when I was 52 or 3. She said, a young man, sooner or later, you're going to realize that you have to take responsibility for your own happiness. I admit that when a lot of people hear this, they perhaps see a sign in their mind that says cliche alert. But the one thing that we have to remember is this is really the lived reality of later life, that according to the oldest Americans, younger people live in a state of what they would call happiness if only. Happy if only I get a job or get a new job or get a partner or get a new partner. And their viewpoint is, at least in later life, you have got to learn how to be happy in spite of things or you aren't going to be very happy. And they did learn this over time. It was very interesting. In at least in somewhere around half the cases, people could point to a specific event or moment where they learned this. X happened, and they were miserable for a year, and suddenly it occurred to them, I need to take responsibility for this. So I think it is something learned over time, and it may be something people have to go through as individuals. But I will say, it fits in extremely well with current psychological thinking, with principles of cognitive behavioral therapy, a technique for psychotherapy that really does argue that people should try to change the way they think about their happiness, to try to reframe situations, to basically choosing to be happy, deciding it's a good enough day to be happy in, is surprisingly consistent with modern psychology too. So I think it's something younger people can get their minds around if they try.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And we're talking with Dr. Carl Pilmer of Cornell University about lessons for living, wisdom of our elders, and studies that he's done and interviews that he's conducted with our oldest citizens about what they believe is important in life and life lessons that we can all embrace. I imagine, Dr. Pilmer, that although senior citizens know these lessons because they've lived them, they've taken them to heart, they may not have articulated them. So this might have been an interesting exercise for them to express what it was exactly that they would advise younger folks. Can you share some of that best advice?
It's a great challenge because in the book, there are 30 lessons for living. And we distilled those, of course, from a whole bunch more. So I really had to think out how to convey best in a very short time like we have what they're really thinking about in terms of their advice. And I went through all of these mountains of data we had. And I think there are a group of lessons, three or four, which constitute what you might call the elder lens on life. And a lot of the other lessons emanate from them. And let me give you one example. I would say one thing which we heard from almost everyone when asked to reflect about their life lessons are these three words. And people said it, by the way, either really or metaphorically, pounding their fist on the table, saying, if there's one thing I'd like you to tell young people, it's this. And those three words are life is short, or life is really short, or life is really, really short, or as a retired engineer said, life passes by in a nanosecond, or, and this is a direct quote, a 99-year-old said, I don't know what happened because the next thing you know, you're 100. And this sense that younger people squander their time is almost like the view of what a desert tribesman might think of our profligate use of water. And they really want to convey this sense of the shortness of life, how quickly it passes, and that you can be certain that when you're 90 or 100, you're going to say, I can't believe how quickly life passed. And so a lot of their lessons emanate from that. If I can give just one example, a big surprise for me in this study was how many people said, choose work for its intrinsic rewards, its sense of purpose and its value to you, and not for the money. I assumed that the oldest Americans who'd lived through the Great Depression would say the opposite. Go out and find the best paying and most secure job you can find, because life is uncertain and the rug can be pulled out from under you at any time. But again, this sense of how short life it is, and over they would say, it's too precious, don't waste it, it's short, so you have to cram in as much as you can. In their view, spending an extra year in a job that you don't like is a waste of this precious lifetime. And the same is true then with many other lessons. I think they really emanate from this sense of a limited time horizon and taking control over how you use your time. So that would be one example of a core lesson and how it works its way out into more specific ones.
In terms of what you should spend your time on then, were there any universal declarations that the elders provided?
I think I can sum it up in one sentence. The elder view is, as you look back over your life, people and experiences are going to trump things in almost every situation in life. Now, they don't want you to be a starving artist, and they were clear about this. But since almost all of them were folks who grew up living with less and managed to be fairly happy, their argument is time spent earning more money than it takes to be comfortable is probably a waste of time. And you certainly don't want to do that to buy stuff. So for example, travel was a key thing. They argued over and over that people should spend money on the experience of travel. So as an 87-year-old said to me, if it's a choice between a kitchen remodel and a trip, I say take the trip. There was this sense of reveling in experience and highlighting that over how you spend your money, for example. So I think it's those kinds of insights that emerge from this, you know, sort of general viewpoint.
One thing I wondered as I read the book, I'm trying to internalize this wisdom. I don't want to wait till I'm 90 years old and think, oh boy, time went quick. I wish I would have done A, B, or C. But my next thought was, I wonder, is it ever really possible to follow words of wisdom that someone else tells you rather than what you come to from your own experience?
I believe there are individual differences. For example, there are people like me who respond to self-help literature and find it extremely useful, and there are others probably whom it's less so. However, I would say that many of us can identify a turning point where someone, a mentor, a parent, a grandparent, has said something to us that put us on a different track. So I think that we are actually receptive to elder wisdom. And if I could expand on that just for a moment, the one thing that we Americans have to remember is that it's only been in the last sort of 100 years or less that people have gone to anyone other than the oldest person they knew for advice. So really, there are studies showing that older people were keys to survival earlier in the human race, that really it's the accumulated knowledge of older people that helped our species even to survive. So I think it's somewhat hardwired in us to be able to take advice and put it to use. I think it may be a little more that we have lost that. So I would say I think it is possible. And I think that readers of the book and young people who've been involved in the project in one way or another have been able to look at it, for example, their advice of don't worry so much, which also sounds like a cliche, but it's one of the biggest regrets of older people, is spending too much time worrying. I've known a lot of people who've either heard that when I've talked about it or read it, and it's at least made them more aware of how damaging the mindless rumination that some of us do is. So I don't think you have to live through, all of it. I mean, really, we don't have to live through a car crash to know it's important to drive carefully. So I think that we can adopt this wisdom, at least in small amounts, in ways that would affect our lives.
Now that you've completed the book, how has your life changed? What wisdom have you been able to incorporate since talking to so many people?
Well, and I'm going to admit this for the first time in a public venue, I'm getting not that far from elderly myself. I mean, I started this book in my early 50s, and now I'm 58. So a lot of the advice about aging in particular, or their roadmap for having a successful old age, has really has extensively helped me. I think really one of the things which affected me the most as someone who, like most boomers, has a kind of aging anxiety is how positive most people are about the experience of old age. So over and over, people, especially in their 90s and beyond, would say things like, I feel freer than I used to. I feel clearer about things. People described old age as a quest, as an adventure. There was one woman who told me to find the magic in it. So on the whole, unless you have a truly disabling chronic condition like dementia, which of course you could have that at any age, not dementia, but some chronic condition, people are really generally happy, energized, excited, and enjoying it. That was immensely helpful to me, I would say. And I think a lot of the messaging about saying things now to people and savoring small aspects of daily existence, I think the people who surround me would say that I've changed in those respects. If I have time for one more, I'll give you one last one.
Sure.
One of the pieces of advice I found most helpful in the entire project is in giving advice for how to deal with a marital argument. A number of people said the following. What you need to do is figure out who the issue is most important to, and basically let that person decide. So I found in my own marriage, we often stop and say, who's this more important to? And then do the resolution along those ways. So I think there are tips like that, which I personally have found very helpful and would like to gather more.
The book is 30 Lessons for Living, Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. Dr. Carl Pilmer, thank you so much for joining us on Take Care.
All right, well, thank you.
Dr. Carl Pilmer is a professor of human development at Cornell University and professor of gerontology in medicine at the Weill Cornell Medical College. For more information on Dr. Pilmer, 30 Lessons for Living, and the Legacy Project, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org, where you can also download podcasts of our show.
Coming up, what are the facts and myths surrounding Lyme disease? And what should you look for if you think you've been infected? Onondaga County Health Commissioner Dr. Cynthia Morrow joins us. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.